The first press run of the Capital Times was on December 13th, 1917, 100 years ago this month. We're looking at the past century of how journalists have covered the news, especially political figures. A new book explores the history of the Cap Times and what it's meant to be a progressive newspaper. The book is The Capital Times, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. The authors are John Nichols and Dave Zweifel. John Nichols has been associated with the Cap Times for more than 20 years, currently is associate editor of the Opinion Pages. He's a national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine and author or co-author of a dozen books. John, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Dave Zweifel is also with us, editor emeritus, and has been associated with the Cap Times for more than 55 years. He served as the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council for 15 years, and he was named to the Wisconsin Newspaper Hall of Fame in 2011 and the Milwaukee Press Club Hall of Fame in 2014. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start by talking about the Capital Times beginning, its establishment. That would be with the founder, William Evue. John, who was this person, William Evue?
Well, we'll have to bring Dave in a second because Dave was actually hired by Evue, which is incredible. But William T. Evue was a master journalist, master businessman, really one of the most successful figures of his time in Wisconsin and even nationally. He's brilliant. He had worked for papers in Milwaukee and Chicago, coming out of Merrill up in northern Wisconsin. He was invited to come up to Madison to basically edit the Wisconsin State Journal. Did a fantastic job. In fact, so good that they made him business manager for the paper, put him basically in charge of running the whole thing. And he was very, very good at it. But he was a genuine classic Wisconsin progressive, and very loyal to Bob La Follette, really in many ways the founding father of Wisconsin progressivism. And when La Follette opposed World War I in early 1917, the State Journal and all the other papers in the state not just turned against La Follette politically, they turned viciously against him. There were calls for his removal from the Senate.
He was a senator at the time.
He was a U.S. senator from Wisconsin.
Senator.
He opposed the war as senator. He was like thrown out of the university club. They burned him in effigy. It was a horrible, ugly time that really paralleled what you'd see later with McCarthyism, and it was even a little worse. And Evue, in an amazing act, quit. He quit the State Journal, quit everything he had, and he got in an old car and started driving around Dane County, knocking on farmers' doors, took the train out to Mount Horeb in those days, and would go to co-op meetings in Blue Mounds, and he said, look, Robert M. La Follette is the only guy who's ever stood for us, for working people, for farmers. He's in their sights. They're trying to take him down. There needs to be a newspaper that tells the truth about World War I being a horrible war that the U.S. shouldn't be in, about the absolute necessity of defending freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and that would stand by La Follette in his progressive crusades. And amazingly enough, people came up with $5 and $10 and small amounts.
And he took a bunch of people with him.
A handful of people.
Okay.
He bought a press, put it down on King Street right near where Anchor Coffee is now. And they did run this first press run. And there's a lot more to tell about it. I won't go too deep into it. But the State Journal and the business community in town basically tried to shut it down immediately. Newspaper boys and even girls had the papers grabbed out of their hands, thrown in the street. They called in federal investigators and said that this paper must be financed either by the Germans or the Soviets or someone. But Evue gutted it out and built this incredible loyalty in the community and really around the state.
Dave, pick up the story from here. What was it like to work for William T. Evue?
Well, he was he hired me back in 1962, fresh out of the university. I had got to know him not very well, but as a kid, newspaper publisher myself in my hometown of New Glarus, and I put out a little weekly newspaper that I distributed around town, wound up with a couple hundred subscribers, actually, by the time I was a senior in high school. But the, I always used to send Mr. Evue a copy of my paper.
And you had him as your columnist, did you not?
Yes, I ran a column just like on my previous model after his Hello, Wisconsin, which is run on the front page. But at any rate, he invited me up to meet him, and so I came to Madison and got to meet him and had a nice long talk with him, and he gave me all kinds of counsel of what I should be doing, and then asked me what I was going to do with my life. I said, well, I want to work for the Capital Times someday, and I told him I was going to go to journalism school in Madison, and he said, well, when you get through school, come and see me. So, of course, years later, I got out of school, went to see him, and, of course, he couldn't remember a thing about that. About that so many years ago. But he said, if I said that, well, then I'm going to hire you. So he hired me, and I've been there ever since. So it's been quite a thing. He's a remarkable man, as John said. He was very smart, not just journalistically, but business-wise as well. It's how he kept the paper afloat and how he actually assured its survival for what is now over 100 years.
Yeah, how did the paper survive those early years, you know, considering that advertisers avoided the paper? Later on, there were financial threats to its existence during the McCarthy years?
Right. Well, he built up a loyalty when the pinch was particularly on. There was always somebody would come through to either give him a loan or some help to keep the paper afloat. There were a couple of times actually when newsprint was on railroad cars in Madison, and he didn't have the money to get the newsprint off, and somebody would come through. Even Bob Afala did at one point, lent him $5,000 to get the newsprint off of the railroad train. So it was quite a struggle, and of course there was a huge advertising boycott originally, and advertisers were, he had something like, I can't remember the figures now, but something like 22 ads lined up for the actually would have been the second edition and the second day of the paper, and the Chamber of Commerce called a boycott, and all but one of the advertisers dropped out. So he wound up that second day with one advertiser. So it was pretty amazing how he was able to keep the paper alive. And then, of course, during the McCarthy days, Joe McCarthy did everything he could to convince business people not to advertise in what he called a communist newspaper. That it was taking orders directly from the Kremlin, and anybody who advertised in it was, you know, aiding and abetting the enemy. And McCarthy was pretty vicious, and that which helps explains why Evue was so intent on exposing him for the low life he really was.
And taking that McCarthy thread to present day, the day before President Trump's inauguration, the Capital Times published an editorial comparing Trump to McCarthy, which basically said that Trump and his treatment of the press was nothing new. John Nichols, do you still feel this way about this?
Of course. I mean, look, Donald Trump actually had a mentor, Roy Cohn, who was one of McCarthy's sidekicks. And the parallels are quite incredible. That sort of always aggressive stance, never backing off, that sense that that established institutions that try to tell the truth are evil. And picking people to attack, Senator Gillibrand just recently as an example. So yeah, we do feel that there's a tremendous parallel there. And one of the things that we said in that editorial is that we see it as our mission to expose the bullies, to pick on the powerful, and not to be cautious or shy about it. To say, yeah, we're out to get you. That's on our editorial page. Our news pages are relatively, in fact, I think very fair and balanced on this. But on the editorial pages, we let it be known that there are folks that really shouldn't be in the positions they're in. We don't think Donald Trump should be. We've said very bluntly, for instance, in our latest editorial, that if Donald Trump fires Robert Mueller, he should be impeached and removed from office. So the one thing about the Capital Times, and I think there was a British journalist who came in the and I think it was the 1960s, toured the U.S. and looked at papers across the country, and he said, most of them are dull as dishwater. There's one paper out in the middle of the country that's actually worth a read because they're always saying something, and that's the Cap Times.
The founder of the Capital Times, William T. Evu, died in 1970. At the time, his newspaper was still committed to a progressive political tradition. The new book, The Capital Times, looks at the paper's 100-year history. We're talking to longtime editors John Nichols and Dave Zweifel. Your questions welcome, 800-642-1234. What are your memories of the Cap Times? What do you think of its progressive tradition? Do your family members with different political beliefs get their news in different places than you? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll return after a news update. The Capital Times, based in Madison, has made a mark in Wisconsin politics and investigative journalism. That upstart news organization that started in protest 100 years ago has a new book out that chronicles its history. We're talking with the authors and longtime editors at the Progressive newspaper. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. John Nichols is with us. He's an associate editor of the Opinion Pages. And Dave Zweifel is editor emeritus and has been associated with the Capital Times for more than 55 years, was hired by the founder, William Evu. The book is The Capital Times, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you read The Cap Times? How do you get your news? How has your news diet changed since President Trump took office? What do you want to see out of mainstream press? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Gary, who joins us now from Glendale. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you. Good morning,
sure.
John. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
My connection to the Cap Times growing up in O'Connell Falls, where my father ran a weekly newspaper, my Republican father, I should add, was through the Sunday morning radio broadcast that the Norbertine father station in Green Bay carried, WTAQ. And it was, in between, when we were driving somewhere in between church broadcasts, my father would pick up Mr. Evu and listen intently. And I think that's why he remained an Eisenhower Republican, perhaps, but because much of the railing that Hello Wisconsin did, and I think you both recall that Mr. Evu did not have a stentorian radio voice. He had a very high-pitched voice, and he would really let McCarthy have it every Sunday, it seemed like, when we'd be driving to on family trips to relatives.
Right.
But that radio broadcast, for those of us growing up in northeastern Wisconsin, where the Green Bay Press-Gazette and the Milwaukee Sentinel were our main news sources.
Mm-hmm. Dave, how did that radio broadcast come to be?
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but Mr. Evu not only was a newspaper pioneer, but he was a radio pioneer as well. In the early 20s, he secured a FCC license for a commercial radio station in Madison, which he called WIBA, Wisconsin Broadcasting Association, is what the WIBA actually stood for. But at any rate, he was a marketer, and he realized that radio could extend the reach of his newspaper as well, and so he began a Sunday afternoon, actually around the noon hour, 15-minute program of commentary, which he called "Hello Wisconsin," and he lined as years went by, he lined up radio stations throughout the state to carry this broadcast. I think there were something like 21 radio stations that carried his commentaries every Sunday during the noon hour, and. So he built up a huge following around the state. People knew Evu, particularly up in the Superior Bayfield areas, and in the Green Bay, and Fox River Valley and Eau Claire La Crosse and places like that because of his Sunday broadcast. And if you were a progressive in Wisconsin, it was necessary for you to listen to this on Sunday just to realize and to learn what was going on.
John, was that a natural extension of the newspaper?
Sure. Evu believed in communications and journalism, not in platforms. And so going to radio was a natural extension. Going to television, as he attempted to do, but was blocked by McCarthy in the 50s, would have been a natural extension. Even today, the Capital Times is primarily, as many newspapers are around the country, digital. And the digital experiment, when the Capital Times went into it, no other newspaper had done what the Capital Times did, that really kind of throw all the way in.
2008?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. And that was done, it was a scary thing to do. But it's proven to be very successful. And I'll say one other thing about the just said Evu broadcast. You will meet people today who can imitate William T. Evu. I can hear his voice because people will actually do it because they grew up as kids doing it. One of them is Russ Feingold. If you ever ask Russ Feingold, what did Evu sound like, he will break into an imitation, because when he was a kid growing up in Janesville, they would come to Hebrew school in Madison, and on the way back, his dad would pull the car over to the side of the road and make all the kids listen to Evu. And so Evu didn't just shape his time. In those days, kids listened to radio, and so generations were conscious of it. And Dave is right. He would go after McCarthy. He would go after, politicians of both parties, as the Cap Times continues to do. But he would also highlight what was in the paper, and it's an important thing to understand. The Capital Times does have a lot of opinions. It's a very passionate paper, but it also has, from its very beginning, from its founding, engaged in investigative journalism that really pushed the limits, and it exposed the war profiteers, local businesses who were profiting off World War I back in 1917, 1918. That has gone all the way through the history of the paper, exposing Nazis operating in Milwaukee, exposing labor conditions in the 60s and 70s, exposing racism in the city of Madison, open housing issues. And even right up to today, the Cap Times continues to win really top investigative reporting awards because it's a very straightforward, very aggressive investigative journalism. Caitlin Farrell from our staff has done remarkable work as regards a host of issues and been honored for it. So what Evu would do on that show is, yeah, he'd go after the bad guys, but then he would also say, you know, what's in the Cap Times this week, or what you ought to be checking out, and he'd take those investigative...
Oh, little teases.
He would, of course.
And it was a real marketing genius, actually, in those early years.
And one final thing is my great-grandfather, who lived in Blue River, got the Cap Times from the day it came out. And you know, there were people around it who got the mail edition all over the state. My mother still does. And the interesting thing about it is there's simply no question that that rooted a different kind of politics in Wisconsin. It's one of the things that really made Wisconsin distinct.
Gary, thank you so much for calling in with that remembrance. The Cap Times is accustomed to being in this position of opposition, and as you described it, the newspaper is belligerent in character, quote, inflexible in its idealism and unyielding in its mission to expose the powers that be. But right now in the world we live in, a lot of mainstream media organizations, including the legacy publications like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, are also in a position of opposition to power, just by the virtue of the fact that the president often criticizes them publicly. What do you make of that and this era of fake news? First, John Nichols.
Sure. Look, one thing the Cap Times has argued is there's always been a lot of fake news. It goes back through our history. Presidents and politicians have lied to us, of both parties. And the Capital Times, you know, interestingly enough, was founded in pretty militant opposition to a Democratic president. We have yet to find a president that we were satisfied with. I mean, we've picked on them both and all the way through, both parties all the way through. And one of the reasons for this is that those who are in power do try to shape the discourse. They try to shape the news to their service, to their benefit. There's nothing they'd like better than, you know, a cheerleading section, if you will. And so one of the things that we've done throughout our history is say that's wrong. And Evu, interestingly enough, he did a thing back when he throughout his career, but around the 50s, 60s, where he started to talk about monopolization of media and how everything was starting to sound very similar. And he actually set out a bunch of tests for publications. You know, will you attack these folks? Will you attack the corporations in your own town? Will you investigate business people, not just, you know, politicians, economic and political power? And the interesting thing about this is that if you applied the Evu test from the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, I think you would see it to be an incredibly effective way of challenging a lot of our existing media. Now, the final element of it, though, that's important is that you talk about legacy publications. One of the things that happened in the past was that when you had politicians who lied, or politicians who tried to manipulate the story, or political groupings that tried to influence it, or money and power, you had this so-called legacy media that did have the ability to call them out, as the Washington Post did Nixon, as an example. As you've seen a weakening of the daily newspaper, of a shrinking of radio newsrooms, a shrinking of television news, moving mostly to weather and sports rather than, you know, investigative or something like that, that has really opened up a space which power, economic and political power, has filled with what we often refer to as fake news, which is just, you know, something dummied up to look like a newspaper, a website, and people do certainly are influenced by it.
Dave Zweifel, I want you to get a chance in here. You know, in this polarizing climate that we're in, what does it mean to be this belligerent voice?
Well, the whole purpose of the press, the reason that we have the First Amendment that the founders bestowed on us is to be that that voice outside of government to let people know that their government needs to be held accountable. So if President Trump says that he is just passed the largest tax cut in the history of mankind, we ought to maybe take a look to see if that's a true statement. But I mean, that's a small example of what the press exists to hold the elected leaders of the country to account to the people, and so often the politicians don't want that to happen, as John points out. I mean, they would rather that the press just sit meekly by and just report the things that they want reported. And that's not the whole purpose. I mean, that's not the purpose of the press at all. And so many politicians want people not to believe that. They want people to believe that, particularly the Trump administration, that if the press reports something they don't like, that the press is being unfair, that the press is, that they made up the story. And that it's all fake news. And this is very dangerous to me, at least, I think, for the future of the country.
Let's go to, I hate to jump in here, but let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie. Go ahead, Steve. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know John started with the story of the start of Capital Times, and you know, it was very interesting to me. I'm kind of against advocacy journalism, and that's kind of what the Capital Times really is. But what's fascinating to me is how that story kind of reminds me of Fox News, that most of the news media went so far to the left that there became a vacuum for people on the right who didn't have a voice, and Fox News and conservative radio is filled that void. And in fact, John sounded eerily like Bill O'Reilly when he made the comment, you know, we have an editorial staff that, you know, editorializes more on progressive types of issues, but our news staff is kind of in the middle and fair. That's right out of Bill O'Reilly. So I just found that story pretty parallel with kind of what happened with Fox News.
Yeah, jump in there, John.
I think that's, I love this call because it goes to the heart, and I'm sure that Steve is trying to illustrate this, of the real deep misunderstandings about a lot of our media in the country. You know, obviously the Capital Times was founded by somebody from Madison, who had worked in local journalism and who went out and got people in the community to support him. Fox was started by an Australian billionaire who wanted to create a network to A, make a lot of money, and B, you know, kind of spread a certain ideology. Now, the fact of the matter is that I don't think it's wrong for there to be conservative newspapers, as there have always been, and progressive or liberal or moderate. You can go across the spectrum. The great challenge in American media is that people sometimes misunderstand that you can be fair and have a point of view. You can have a strong opinion, and you can have a wall of separation between your news gathering and your commentary. One of the things that's interesting when I watch Fox is that often their news gathering isn't so bad. They do the job, but their commentary doesn't follow from it. They're like, well, yeah, we saw that reported, but we don't think that's true. They've even had some of their own commentators come out and say, or some of their own news people come out and say, hey, this isn't true, what's being reported the rest of the night here. And at the Cap Times, one of the things, and I think at a lot of great newspapers across this country, one of the things that they've tried to do is to, have that point of view, have that opinion on their opinion pages, to be strong, to crusade, but also to have a news operation that goes out and gets to the heart of the matter. There's a blurb on the back of the book from Tommy Thompson, the former Republican governor of Wisconsin, and I think it sums it up better than anything I could say. You can even, if you want, read it.
Well, I disagree with the Capital Times most of the time, but I've always read it because the reporting, the writing are great, he says, and because I want to know what the genuine progressives are thinking. So, so there he is right there on the back. And, Steve, thank you so much for calling in with that. Let's go to John in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, John, go ahead.
Yes, I guess I agree with Steve, I think, because it's not the job of the news media to put opinions out there. The job of the news media historically has been about facts, bringing forward the facts and letting people filter through that. Opinions are, well, there's a saying about opinions that I grew up with that I can't say on the air, but everybody has one. If they say they don't, they're full of it.
Dave Zweifel, go ahead.
Well, no, I really disagree with you. Part of the news, the function of a newspaper, obviously, is to report the facts and to get the stories and to report what's going on in their local governments or down at the pool hall in downtown Eau Claire. But it's in another vital duty of a newspaper or a news organization is to be a leader and to express your opinions, and because you do work very closely with the government leaders and things, that you need to tell people, to give people your opinions of what's actually going on, and to your feelings about what makes a better government, you're in a position to express that and to try to convince other people that they should believe that way as well.
If I could just offer John one gentle
really quickly,
corrective
uh-huh.
to about journalism in America. Really, journalism in America was founded by Tom Paine and people like him who expressed passionate opinions. In fact, it was journalism that called America into being with publications like Paine's Common Sense. And so opinions are a part of this.
The book is The Capital Times, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. Our guests are John Nichols and Dave Zweifel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this news update. The new book is The Capital Times, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cherkent. The authors John Nichols and Dave Zweifel stay with us. John is associate editor of the Opinion Pages and a national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine. Dave Zweifel is editor emeritus and has been associated with the Cap Times for more than 55 years. He served as the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council for 15 years. You can join this conversation about journalism and progressive journalism at the Cap Times at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jimmy, who joins us in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just heard the comments earlier on editorializing, and I agree that that's an important part of journalism. My issue is when it gets mixed together and the reader or the somebody watching a news program can't tell where the editorializing begins and the actual facts of the story end. And so I would, you got your Fox News on the right, your MSNBC on the left, and they put a certain bend on every story. And I know this is newsprint, but I would just like to make sure that papers do a good job in separating the different sections of the paper, so folks know when it's somebody's opinion instead of a fuzzy area between fact and what somebody thinks about those facts.
Jimmy, thank you so much for calling in. And John Nichols, how do you negotiate that gray area between what is commentary and what is reporting?
We do what Jimmy asked. We separate the sections. I'm holding it up. If radio had TV, we actually have a section entitled Opinion and Commentaries. And I think
But the internet blurs the lines there.
Totally. And look, here's one of the challenges. Jimmy's right on. And here's the heart of the matter. When people complain about opinion being reported as fact, what I think they're really complaining about is sort of a loss of diversity in media, a loss of competition where you have a lot of different papers, a lot of different radio stations with great news operations, great commentary, all this stuff. As it becomes more one size fits all, there is a tendency to think that your local paper or your radio station or whatever it just speaks truth from on high. And you do start to blend all these things together. One of the things that Bob McChesney and I have argued for many years is that our schools should teach media literacy from kindergarten all the way through until you're done, to high school. And why I say that is that I think that if people understand these distinctions and if they know what to look for in media, we get a very, very different and better circumstance. One of the great challenges as I look at kids today is kids know more in many ways than they ever have. They're getting this huge inflow of information. Unfortunately, they don't necessarily know how to make those distinctions. I think this is a huge place where the schools should be involved.
Jimmy, thanks so much. And Dave, are kids like you, do they start their own newspapers when they're teenagers?
well, I don't know if they do that anymore or not. They probably start their own talk shows.
Or websites.
Blogs, right.
Yeah. But I always marvel at, it's the way people sometimes perceive news stories. Obviously, a news story is going to, for the people who are on the right side of it, are thinking, God, this is a really wonderful story that, it's very accurate. And those who are, on the other side think, oh, this is terribly biased. And as John says, it's people do have difficulty distinguishing between what they consider to be opinion and news, and it is something that we need to have a better understanding of, I think, as citizens of a democracy, which always concerns me that we have sort of as a nation sort of abdicated our responsibility to stay informed so that we can make good decisions.
Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander now. Hi, Rich.
Thanks. I'm old enough to remember when the South was Democratic and not Republican.
Yeah,
and I also remember walking up this driveway, entering this house, and hearing the EVU broadcast, and the Capital Times came to this mailbox out here on this road when I was a young kid. I'm also questioning people's listening skills, because if I heard John correctly, the Capital Times was born sort of in a period of war as an anti-war paper. And in the history of the country, we've had hearings about war profiteering, and after World War One, World War Two, we're now engaged in perhaps the longest war we will ever fight, sort of an Orwellian war. And I'm wondering if John and Dave could talk a little bit about the history of the Capital Times with regard to how it reported on the civil rights movement and also on war profiteering. That is, people becoming extremely wealthy because of how they promoted war.
Rich, thanks for those questions. John Nichols?
Sure. Rich, you got to get the book. It makes a fine holiday gift. And it has chapters on these exact issues. So, on the chance...
You digress.
But I digress. it's just that we actually divide the book up into chapters on civil rights and on wars and on corporate issues and things like this,
yeah,
because we wanted people to understand the sort of arc of history. Now, quickly, the Capital Times had one of its greatest moments right at its start. And you asked about the civil rights movement. The Ku Klux Klan was marching in Washington, or in Madison.
Awesome.
Marching in Washington, too. In the early 1920s, the Ku Klux Klan was very much on the march politically. It had huge influence in both political parties. The reason Robert La Follette ran for president in 1924 as an independent progressive was at least in part because both major parties were so influenced by racists. And when the Klan marched in Madison, the Capital Times exposed the people behind it, revealed who was promoting it, put names in the paper. It was a very, very aggressive reporting on this. And also editorially, we passionately argued that this was fundamentally wrong. And the interesting thing about it is that passionate early fight, I think, had put a deep imprint on the Cap Times. I could go through the history, which is so well told in the book, by the way. But I will rather suggest to you that in the early 1960s, the Madison City Council was voting on some open housing issues, and the council was just going slow. It wasn't moving. The Capital Times put the pictures of everybody that was standing in the way on the front page and put their phone numbers and said, call these people. So it's been a long-term commitment.
It's interesting because it leads into a question that you write that the Capital Times never went respectable. What does, quote, respectable, air quotes there, journalism mean in 2017 and beyond in this era? Dave?
Well, I think respectable means that you do indeed pay attention to what's going on around you, that you, you're credible, that you research, that you, and when you do take positions, you explain them and make people understand why it is you came to this conclusion. So it's, you know, to be respectable, it's more difficult today than it was, but just because of the incredible number of voices that are out there. But it's you have to cut through all that static and stand up for what you believe in.
Artis in Richland Center is with us. Artis, go ahead.
Hi. I'm understood that you were going to be naming editors of the Capital Times, and I'm wondering if you have a Cedric Parker. He was from Fenimore, and yep. Any stories about him I had heard that or read someplace that he really is one to cut down Carthyism a lot.
Yes,
right?
Cedric is very much alive in our book, and he was actually my first boss at the paper, and he was extremely proud of being from Fenimore.
Well, and Cedric was an incredible character. At the end of the book, Dave does a chapter because Dave has been associated with the paper for, you know, more than half of its life. Dave does a chapter on the characters of the paper, and Cedric. Would you say, Dave, that Cedric pretty much owns that section of the paper?
Yeah.
Of the book, yeah.
I mean, think that's correct.
He was a huge personality. There's even endowed some stuff at the journalism school. His family did ultimately, but the critical thing about Cedric was he was a passionate and courageous investigative reporter who would go into a Nazi meeting and sit down with them and take down names and then go publish it all. He was that kind of guy.
He exposed the existence of slot machines in northern Wisconsin back when they were really an ogre in society, and he was so clever that he would get the tavern owners who had these slot machines to actually pose in front of the machines and he'd take their picture, and he never, of course, explained who he was actually working for, but
we're gonna this is horrible because there's so many other issues to discuss, but there's one final Sed Parker thing to do. You know, he would go to meetings where they were like really awful racists or something like that, and he would pass around a notepad and say, let's get everybody's name and address so we can keep in contact, and then he'd put it in the paper.
In introducing the book, you say that the Cap Times is a shouter, and as we close here, we got about 15 or so seconds. How do you stay effective as a, quote, shouter in the age of social media and organizations that are conspiracy theories and in the age of U.S. politics today?
We try to shout louder than those who would sell out to power, economic or political. And one of the things is we take bold stands. We recently called for Attorney General Brad Schimmel to step down because of his failed attempt to go after the GAB and other institutions. And taking those bold stands doesn't mean everybody's going to approve or agree with us, but you'd be surprised how much that makes you part of the discussion.
Yep. Well, thank you both so much. John Nichols, Dave Zweifel, they're the longtime editors at the Capital Times. The new book is The Capital Times, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Good provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.